Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The haunting legends of a mighty Bigfoot have made man's blood run cold for centuries, some terrific and some terrifying. The Southern Appalachian Mountains whisper the mysteries of this strange and powerful creature through its smoky hills and ominous embrace. This is Brandon Thomas with Expanding Reality, elated to announce our very first Expanding Reality Excursions Befriending Bigfoot event. This is going to take place on a beautiful 27-acre ranch in Blairsville, Georgia, May 15th through the 20th. This intimate conference is going to feature Bigfoot adventure hikes in three different states, river kayaking, nightly presentations from such incredible presenters as Alexander Petikoff, Chris Matthew, Dave Zed, Preston Dennett, and many more. Also, we're going to be doing some UFO watching, some jam sessions, all kinds of hangouts. Visit expandingrealitypodcast.com/events for more information. That's expandingrealitypodcast.com/events. We'll see you there.
A choice right now, between fear and love. It's just a rock.
Out of the dark night of ignorance and into the shining light of truth.
Expounding reality.
A population of citizens capable of critical thinking.
We don't see things as they are, we see them as we are.
There's a level of reality where everything dissolves into an ocean of energy.
We empower our experience by insisting on our authenticity.
That's very profound.
Very.
Expand reality.
Brandon Joe Williams. Welcome back to this motherfucker. I'm going to stop listing out the episodes 206, 254, and 264 in these, and now I'm just going to refer everybody to the collection that we have going on Patreon over there. It's called the Sovereign Rangers, and you guys can check out all the episodes that we've done there. They're absolutely free. They also include transcripts, so if you're sitting there going like, man, I wish that, you know, transcript, it's there and it's all free. So you guys check that out, linked in the show description below. All of his episodes previous to this, 206, 254, and 264, will be located down there in that collection. Brandon, dude, this is an awesome one. We're coming up on tax season here. I know ROE is not going to take that long, but I'm very curious as a business owner. There are a lot of people out there who are getting out of the game to where they're not filing with their company for W-4s or telling them that they want to get out of that system. They're looking for a way to take their own LLC or their business. And how do we navigate through these crazy ass waters? First of all, good to see you. You keep looking better, and I don't want to talk about it, but it's good to see you, dude. How are you?
It's that B on B energy, you know what I'm saying?
Get it.
What's up, man? Yeah. So the ROE is really simple. I know there's a lot of people talking about it endlessly on the internet. I don't really see why. The IRS operates on whatever information you give them. And previously, you most likely gave them some information. And the ROE is just updating that previous information that you gave them that makes sure that in the future they won't be able to assume that the previous information that you had originally given them before could possibly still be true. That's essentially the entire ROE in a nutshell.
It's the best way of explaining it, because when you start talking IRS, you start talking like, oh my God, I'm going to what now? I'm going to opt out of this. Is it even voluntary? And you get into all those, and we could talk philosophy on it. And it's not even that. It's just law, guys. This is a voluntary system for you to hand over part of your income tax. And that's what they threw the T in the harbor for. And they actually won that battle. So you actually don't have to do it. You've just been tricked into thinking that you do. And so the way that you put it in a sense of that they're just, you're correcting a clerical error on a
that you put on there, that you put on there. That's the part that's so complicated. You created the clinical error. You didn't know you were creating the clinical error because you did not know the definitions of the words, terms, and phrases. Now you are cleaning up the definitions of the words, terms, and phrases, and you're realizing that the previous clerical error that you submitted to them that never needed to be submitted in the first place at all, it was voluntary, now can be corrected with all of the true and correct information now that you have taken the time to clean up all of the words, terms, and definitions associated with your relationship or the relationship of your business or businesses or trusts with the Internal Revenue Service. It's very simple.
So it works the same whether you're employed through somebody else or you are yourself employed.
Doesn't matter. When you have an employer, it gets a little more complicated because now you're having to deal with all the fears and insecurities associated with your employer or your employer's payroll company, which that's where the real issues are. The IRS is the easiest thing in the world to deal with. Payroll companies and employers are not.
Fuck. It's just empowering. Do you think that they're like gatekeepers for the IRS almost in a sense?
No.
To where,
okay. No. Absolutely not. Absolutely
see,
not.
I love that you don't see any malevolence here. I love that you just see it as, look, guys, just correct the paperwork. That's it. We have the information. It's that simple.
No. There's people are just scared. They're just freaked out. I'd say about 50% of all the people that I deal with and who message me, their employer just doesn't care, which is actually legally how it's supposed to be. Anything that any of your employees give you, you're supposed to just process it. There is no, you aren't an accountant. You aren't any of these things. You don't have any ability to even determine what is correct and what is not. And if someone gives you a form, you're supposed to just process that because that's just the way it works. You can even see like on the I-9, all the nationality stuff is the same. You're not supposed to do any discrimination or anything involving anything that anyone gives you. If they give you documents, you're just supposed to process them. And you're not really, if you have a concern about the legalities of that, then you just get a little document and you just write up something simple and you state, I don't know what this is. I'm going to process this and you can have your employee release any liability from you. Just have them sign a little release of liability form on whatever it is that they're doing. That is by far the safest way for any employer to behave. You have a release of liability that you draw up, that you have the employee notarize or sign or however you want to do it. And then whatever they give you, you just process it. That's protecting yourself on every front, because then you can never get in trouble for any sort of slavery or involuntary servitude or discrimination case, which that's kind of where some of these things are going. But at the same time, if you are truly really nervous about whatever it is that someone's giving you and you're not sure that it's even correct, even within the framework of what we're doing, that release of liability should help. What are you going to do? You're not an accountant. What are you going to do? You're going to, if you're a withholding agent, how far does you working for the IRS for free go? How far would you like that to go? I mean, that's really the question. Do you want to work for the IRS for free as a terrified slave, making sure that every single document that anyone gives you before you give it to them is perfect, even though you do not have the capacity to do so and probably no one on the planet really does? Or do you want to just simply process whatever they give you? Just that's what the IRS does. The IRS processes anything you give them. So if you really want to be like the IRS and you want to be a withholding agent for the IRS, then act like the IRS. If you give me a fucking piece of toilet paper, I'll process it. That's what the IRS
exactly
does.
What to do with it.
Yeah, that's what the IRS does. IRS processes anything you give them, man.
And for your employer to kind of hold a grudge, it's like they're offered forms. These are offered forms. You're just unfamiliar. Maybe that's the case. And that's something we can be walked through together. But there's pride in that. I get that they're the manager and they're supposed to know what all these things are. But if there's a little humility there, then they could admit to that there's too many damn things for them to know all of, and that you can discover together, and that your confidence in this as an employee will empower your employer as well. And you may be starting sort of an amazing awareness campaign unbeknownst.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of people get excited about this. A lot of people freak out, but a lot of people get excited too. They're like, wow, can I do this? And it's kind of the buzzword in the office. So there's a lot of good things that can happen from all this too. It all comes down to, like I say all the time, mindset and diplomatic behavior, staying calm as best you can, answering questions. Excuse me. You know what I mean? It's not about just going berserk and freaking out all the time. And
yeah, no. The squeaky wheel gets you old, but you don't have to be a douche about it,
Yeah.
So With an employee, there's a couple of forms that people can fill out. If you don't mind, dude, let's just run through a couple here. And then I would like to, if you don't mind, talk how it relates to your business, like to your LLC and all that kind of stuff, and what your recommendations for a free person navigating that field with all those options can do, if you have any advice.
Yeah, so if you look up, let me do a little screen share.
Absolutely. Video version of this in the show description, guys. Look it in the Sovereign Rangers series collection over there for free on Patreon. Go check it out. Transcript included. You can find that down below. So join us. He's got some sharesies he's going to do.
Let's see here. Did I share my screen already? Oh, here it is.
Did not.
There we go.
Bam.
So we've got 42 USC 9102, subsection 18. United States citizen means, if you look at subsection C, any corporation, partnership, association, or other entity organized or existing under the laws of the United States. So when you get anything from the government, a corporation, a partnership, an association, or other entity, so it could be anything you're going to get from the government, that entity operates under the laws of the United States. So by definition, that entity, which is a person, is a United States citizen. That's how they get into your bank accounts and all the good stuff, right? So the thing is that if there's only one type of entity that I'm aware of that you can put together that allows you to operate, you don't have to operate under the laws of the United States. Basically, the way that the United States is built is they have this whole huge law system and they have all these codes and they have all the stuff. And the way that they consider is that we're offering all of this as essentially like a legal framework, like a subscription service, essentially, right? And if you would like to subscribe to our subscription service, you may do so. And the payments that you make are taxes and the, you know, there are certain negative aspects to it, and then there are certain positive aspects to it as well, right? Now, the thing I don't really understand about all this is that when you file a lawsuit, you can be a foreign nation or a foreign trust, and you can still grant jurisdiction to the court as the plaintiff. That way, the court can actually get things done and actually take on the case and actually adjudicate the case. So why you would want something that's organized or existing under the laws of the United States, I'm not too sure, because you can still litigate. You can still do everything you need to do without having it be this thing. And the way that you do it is you just file a private irrevocable trust, which is literally just a document that breaks down how the trust exists. And then what happens is you have two witnesses watch you sign it, or you can have a notary public watch you sign it. Most people prefer to have the two witnesses, but you can do it either way. And this private irrevocable trust is not a United States citizen, and it's created by you and your buddies, and it's totally separate from being under the laws of the United States. So at that point, you kind of call the shots, and then you can get a bank account for that trust or whatever, and then you can get, you know, banking information and EIN. You need an EIN to open a bank account. And you can do all that without needing for it to be a United States citizen without it being an issue. So I don't know. I mean, you can do it either way. You can do it however you want. But the thing is that the way this actually works is you are signing up for a subscription service. They're offering you an entity that's a part of their subscription service. And what you're doing is you're saying, yes, I want that entity that's part of that subscription service over and over and over and over and over. You didn't know you were doing that, but that's exactly how it works. There is absolutely nothing anywhere that's forcing you to go out and get an S corp or a C corp or an LLC from the government. There is no legal basis to anyone or anything ever forcing you to do any of that. That would be involuntary servitude, which is highly illegal, even in the United States code. There is no such thing as involuntary servitude. There is only voluntary servitude. You will not find involuntary servitude anywhere in the society. You will not find involuntary servitude anywhere in the United States code, except to tell you that people are going to prison for a very long time if they do it.
So you don't recommend an S corp, an LLC, any of the shit. You recommend just getting out of the game altogether. And now this is a question I've had simply because it's the way that I've needed to navigate this was get an LLC. That's the way I was, you know, that's the advice I was given. So that's what we did. So your advice is to go with a trust, set that thing up, get an EIN there, use that as the bank and just operate the business through that rather than do an LLC or an S corp or anything like that.
That's what I do. I have trusts and I run everything through trusts. I mean, I don't know how hard it's going to be to get something like corporate credit. If you want to build like business credit, you probably can't do that with a private trust. You probably need to have a corporation, but they can be separate. I have several trusts. I even actually still have a corporation. I don't do anything with it. I don't even know if it's still there. But yeah, you can have a whole series of trusts and you can have corporations and you can have everything you want. And each individual entity is a person. And each person can have a nationality. Each person can have bank accounts. Each person can have whatever you want it to have. Because remember, naturalization is the conferring of nationality of a state upon a person after birth by any means whatsoever. So you can also confer nationality of a state upon the various persons that you have, such as associations, partnerships, trusts, corporations. So you kind of, it's like having kids. If you just think of your trusts and your corporations and all this stuff as your children, it actually does make more sense legally to do that because they are persons and they do have nationality.
And by us not, and we're going to talk about tax returns here in a minute, but by us not writing, you know, participating in the system, you wouldn't view them as kids in the sense, because I know some people's minds may have gone, oh, I can write that off, right? In a sense that, oh, I can still make money off of the system by playing it a little bit differently, but is that still playing within the system?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting conversation, I guess, to have just for the sake of laughing about it and having some whiskey. Is a entity, which is a person, could those things be considered dependents? I mean, well, at that point, then, you're just kind of trolling because it doesn't even matter. It doesn't matter because if you go to 26 USC 7701, and you look up what the definition of taxpayer is, A14. The term taxpayer means any person subject to any internal revenue tax. So you either are subject to any internal revenue tax or you are not. Each person. So you have you as a natural person. You have the ens legis, which is your name in all capital letters, which is a public corporation. Then you have all of your corporations, your trusts, associations, partnerships, etc. Each individual person, you need to determine if that person is subject to any internal revenue tax. The only way you can be subject to any internal revenue tax is by volunteering, because involuntary servitude does not exist in this society or this country. So just by knowing the term taxpayer and just by knowing that involuntary servitude cannot physically exist, and any place that you believe it could exist, you're missing something, or you're not understanding something, or you're allowing your emotions to get too far ahead of you and your logic's kind of going out the window. Involuntary servitude does not exist. So for a person to be subject to any internal revenue tax, you must have volunteered previously. The revocation of election says, I previously volunteered, didn't know what I was doing. I hereby revoke that previous volunteering that I did. And that's all it is. It's very, very simple. I still don't know why people are talking about the revocation of election for hours and hours and hours. I'm not even sure what there is to talk about.
You know what it is. I'll tell you what it is. It's confidence, man. It's in sales, there's a term called early and often. And the whole reason for this is just to build confidence. And honestly, I've heard you say it 1,000 times, but I'd hear you say it 1,000 more in the same exact way or a few different, just simply because you add new words, you add new nuance. And with our greater understanding of the work that we do, the things that you say repeated make sense now. Like that we can visit this conversation with new eyes. Because when you first came on, we talked about this. Now I see it completely different. So as you're explaining it as well, I know this may be old hat to you, but I know there are probably a lot of people out there who really appreciate the monotony of it. Because I feel that this is one of those things that if you crave repetitiveness and learning, this is the thing to do that in. So many things are said here, so many codes, so many intricate workings about this as well as philosophy. So it's important, I think, to absolutely throw spotlights on these bitches. Oh, let's replay this movie, you know, a few times, right? Because it gains new insights every time, I feel.
Yeah. And so you previously volunteered. Once you volunteer, now you have a tax liability. And then now, if you don't pay your tax liability, then they're going to come after you. Now people believe that what's going to happen is you don't pay taxes, or you decide, actually it's even worse than that, you decide that you're no longer going to pay taxes, which is a horrible sentence itself, because that's not the question at all. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Shit way to phrase it, right? It's a leading way.
So what that sentence says is you have a tax liability of which you have volunteered to give yourself, and now you are actively not going to perform on that volunteer duty. That's basically what you're saying, right? So what happens is now at that point, that's where you're going to get in trouble, and you're not going to get in trouble in 5 seconds. Now, let's say you totally freak out and you send the IRS threatening letters and you say they're going to come burn their building down and that they're the devil and that blah, 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 blah. Well, now you're going to accelerate the difficulties that you're having. I know a lot of people who don't pay. They don't know a single thing. They call, you know, 2-3 years and they're not paying, and they just say, hey, can I do a payment plan? And they say, sure. And they just wipe everything and they set up a payment plan. They're very easy to work with. You know, that's totally outside of anything that we're doing, but I'm just saying that as an illustrative example. If you don't say anything, if you don't do anything, it's going to take them months and months or years. And then finally they're going to say, you know, you haven't paid this. We have a notice of levy. We're going to take money out of your bank account. Now, the only reason why they send you a notice of levy is because they have access to look and see what you have in your bank accounts. They're not going to send you a notice of intent to levy if they didn't think you actually had the money in there to levy. So that's also part of it. When you put your money in a private irrevocable trust, they can't see any of it.
Even if it's in a bank account?
No, it makes no difference.
So if it's in a Chase bank account through an EIN through your trust, they can't see it at all because that EIN is tied to the trust.
They can't see it because in a trust, the trustee does not own what's in the trust.
Right.
Basic trust law, right?
God owns that shit.
You don't own it. So how can they see it or grab it or get access to it? You don't own it. It's not yours.
It's fascinating, dude.
So the thing is that, you know, you a lot of times you don't even need to do anything, you know, with a trust. I mean, I always say the same thing. It's very, very simple. If you've ever sent them anything and now you're studying all this and you realize that one or more things that you had previously sent them was not correct, just update your files. That goes for the Social Security Administration. That goes for the Department of Motor Vehicles. That goes for the Department of State. That goes for the Internal Revenue Service. That goes for the VA's office. I don't care. I can go on and on and on for the next hour and a half and just mention any organization, governmental organization, anything. Doesn't matter. If you have previously sent information to any of these different entities or any department of the government or the DOJ or a lawsuit or anything at all whatsoever, and now you're looking at this information and you realize, oh, geez, some of that information was not correct and I'd like to update my information, it's no different than doing like an address change. When you change when you move, you go on the USPS website and you do a forwarding of your address. You do an address change, right? All this stuff and the ROE and all this stuff that we're talking about is basically just an address change. You're just filing an address change. There's some previous information that's not correct. I don't want there to be any assumptions made on incorrect information. Here is all the correct information. I apologize for not looking up these terms and definitions previously. That simple.
It is that. And so again, it's this type of empowerment that really helps. It's just updating information. It's almost like energetically you're clearing cookies in your cache. And do you feel like, I mean, cause you've got to feel different after not only knowing that these parasites are in you, or it's just sort of the way I visualize it, that you've unbeknownst to you, sign these contracts that now you're involved in. And so they're sort of like just cookies that you just accepted real quick to get in the web page. But now you've got all these cookies bogging out your system. And so you just go through and clean them up, right? You just clear them out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that simple. And you can update your information and change your information and do whatever you want and send in new documents as many times as you want and as often as you want. Makes no difference.
What do you do as far as, so professionally working with an employer, and we've already talked about that, and I think the liability letter is awesome. So there's forms for that that are easy to come across. What is the process for a corporation to also revoke their election into paying into that system?
Yeah, I would open up a private irrevocable trust, and I would move all the assets from the corporation over to the trust, all the money, move it over to the new bank account. Any titles that have been issued, either get the titles destroyed or transfer them to the trust name rather than having them be under the corporate name. And any other assets that are not there or that have previously been conferred to the corporation, just confer them into the trust. And just get everything moved, or a series of trusts, something like that, however you want to do it. Trusts give you limited liability. Trusts can have bank accounts. I process bank account, I process credit card payments. Trust accounts don't have monthly service fees, I don't think. I believe it depends on what bank you're at. They pay me interest into my trust accounts, just a teeny tiny little bit. I even went in there to get a cashier's check or money order recently to pay for the American Express case. They only accept here in LA at the LA Superior Court. They only accept cashier's checks and money orders. So I had to go get one. And the lady was having a heck of a time trying to punch in the $5 charge. And then the supervisor came over and she said, for some reason, we aren't allowed to charge your account service fees. I said, okay. So there's some kind of note on my account where they literally cannot charge me service fees. So they just gave me the cashier's check for free.
So let's say, go ahead, please.
So there's a lot of benefits to setting up these kinds of accounts from my experience. There are a lot of benefits even in terms of how the banks treat your account and how the account works. And I don't know of any downside to it. I would say the only possible downside is just the fact that, I don't know if I would be able to get like business credit based off of the trust. But then when you go for business credit, they're going to ask for a social security number anyway. So I just don't, even that's kind of a moot point. I don't know. I just don't know enough about all that to really even care. So besides that, which may or may not be a possibility, everything else is a pro.
Gotcha. And that was sort of the question is, do you still need to keep like your LLC, for instance, but just keep it at a very limited capacity and only run like enough through it, let's say, to not show a profit. And I don't know if this is like scamming or something like that, but the whole point is that if you still need a forward facing sort of ins legis to operate with, then it is going to need to be something that is in the public sector. So in that case, you are going to need something. Can you revocate, elect your ass out of that EIN number being in a system of voluntary taxes? Or is, once you're a corporation or an LLC or anything like that, does that make it to where you're so part of that system to where you're now not considered able to elect out of it?
I don't know, because the definition of a U.S. citizen is, an individual that is by law or by birth or by naturalization. So you can renaturalize any person that you would like to renaturalize, but they were born out of the United States. When you get a corporation, an LLC or an S corp or anything else, or a sole proprietorship from the government, it's birthed from the government. The government, it creates a birth of this person, like a child, right? So I would say it's probably not the best choice personally. And no, you don't need to run anything through it. You can run, it's a voluntary system. If you would like to run money through, and then what is income? That's a whole nother, what is income? A promissory notes called Federal Reserve notes that don't have any intrinsic value that everyone believes they do and they really don't. No, that's not income. That's not income. That's private acquisition of funds and securities that have no intrinsic value. So how can you have a profit when you're collecting something that has no intrinsic value? It has value only because we believe it has value, but in the legal world, it doesn't actually have any value. So you could collect a billion Federal Reserve notes and you'd still write zero under income. I would. And if they think that that's wrong and they think that I'm incorrect, then we can figure all that out in a federal court, which ain't going to happen because they don't go after people who are a pain in the ass. They go after low hanging fruit that is easy to win, and they want the big money and they want to win fast and they want to win easy. Someone like me is going to be a horrific 25 years of death and they're never going to get a penny out of me. So why would they do it? Right. So the situation is very simple. I don't believe that income is clearly defined, because I believe if there was going to be something that would actually fit income, it would have to be gold and silver coins. But the Internal Revenue Service, as far as I know, they're very clear that they don't have any jurisdiction over, nor do they want to have anything to do with gold and silver coins. So I don't, when you start getting into gold and silver coins, the United States code is very, very strange. And it has been ever since 1933, ever since the Emergency Banking Act. There's so much weird convoluted information involving gold and silver coins. And there's just so much weird, like dark alleys that just kind of end nowhere. And there's just like no information and they're like talking about something. And then it's like, then it just kind of like vanishes. And it's like, what the hell just happened? Like there's so much of that when it comes to gold and silver coins. And then if you look in the periodicals on the Federal Reserve website, they say that lawful money has never actually been truly defined by Congress, which is silly. Lawful money has always been gold and silver coins. But the thing is that because the government that we live in now is so weird and so insane on the subject of gold and silver coins, and you can see it in the United States Code, they just kind of pretend as though gold and silver coins are just, you know, they just kind of, I don't know what, it's literally like if the government is a person, you know, the government is a federal corporation. So it is by definition a person. And that person is very psychotic on the subjects of gold and silver coins. So when you say income, I would say gold and silver coins would be the only thing that would be considered income, and they don't want to have anything to do with it. So, because in order for it to be income, it would have to be a true positive in law. Profit or income can only be gold and silver coins. It can't be Federal Reserve notes. So that's a whole nother avenue on all this. But if you want to just kind of stick with location and nationality, you have naturalization is the conferring of nationality of a state upon a person after birth by any means whatsoever. So if I wouldn't care, you know, I mean, you could have an S corp or LLC and you could go down that same route and just say it is an income and this is why, and you can explain yourself. But that, it may never come to that. You never know when it's going to come to that. And even if it did, you know, whatever, it just depends on what you want to do and how you want to be set up. I mean, I feel like, you know, there's a million different ways to win. The simple fact is this, and this is the part that I think is the hardest thing to understand for people emotionally, but it's the most important thing to know logically. And I've said it a million times and I will continue to say it a million times. Involuntary servitude does not exist. It just doesn't. And if there's any one individual person in the Internal Revenue Service, it's not the Internal Revenue Service. It's one person. Like a lot of times when I hear about horror stories and I hear about this and I hear about that, it's one guy. And I know, like, I had Dave Champion on my show the day, and he was talking about how there was a guy who was coming after him, and he doesn't even know if it was a synonym or not, a pseudonym or antonym or whatever the hell the name is, because he never even met the guy. He never showed up in court. So you also have that where it could be a person and it's not even their name and you never get to meet them. But the thing is that it's a situation where I don't believe that it's the Internal Revenue Service. It's one person at the Internal Revenue Service and no one is saying no to this particular individual. And this particular individual is running amok for some reason. Because the thing is that the Internal Revenue Service doesn't care. They follow the rules. They follow the laws. And the term taxpayer means any person subject to any internal revenue tax. And they are fairly clear, in my opinion. I think it's pretty clear as to who is subject and who is not and why. And you can move all these different persons around whenever you want by simply conferring the nationality of a state upon a person after birth by any means whatsoever. And then, you know, income is just a such a silly. And then there's also specific points in the United States Code that talk about how wages cannot be taxed. So if you work as an employee, and you can look that up online, probably Google would be fine for something like that. Wages not subject to any income tax. There's a whole section on that. But it doesn't matter, because the thing is that it's not, Federal Reserve notes don't have any intrinsic value. So you only pay taxes on that of which you have gained or collected an intrinsic value on. So Federal Reserve notes are actually they're called evidence of a debt. It's evidence that a debt exists. That is the exact definition of a Federal Reserve note. It's the exact definition of any promissory note or bill of exchange. It's evidence that a debt exists. That is the definition of a negotiable instrument, right? So, if you're collecting these contracts that are evidence that a debt exists, and these particular contracts supposedly have value, and they're essentially endorsed payable to the bearer, there hits a certain point when you start to understand all this stuff where it just gets so goofy and insane that it just doesn't make sense anymore. And that's basically what it is. It just doesn't make sense anymore. There is no such thing as income in this world. It would only be gold and silver coins. And the IRS and all these different places, they don't want to have anything to do with it. I believe there's even a section like, they won't even accept gold and silver coins as a payment on a tax liability. I believe there's a whole section on that where they talk about how they won't accept all these different hilarious things. Joe Lustico showed it to me one time, and it was like grocery coupons and like all the silly gift cards, all the silly stuff that they send in it's really actually pretty, pretty wild and goofy. And I think gold and silver coins is on that list of things that they don't accept. The government and any government agency in this culture that we live in, they just don't, you know, gold and silver coins are the devil. Very confusing. It's a very confusing subject.
Well, it's interesting because it's tangible. It's tangible. It's usable. It's viable. It's mineable. It's quantifiable. And so it's not also added. You can't really add debt to it because it's, again, very physical object that you can weigh and measure and quantify. So that's the issue with it, is it's not manipulatable, you know?
Yeah, they can't do it. I mean, if you bring back gold and silver coins and, you know, everything, this whole structure, everything, including even Wall Street, just crumbles, just poof, it's just gone, you know? So, you know, IRS goes poof, Federal Reserve goes poof, CIA, FBI goes poof, pretty much. I mean, because what happens with gold and silver coins too is that now, in order to fund anything, the people have to fund it. And if the people don't want to fund it, it doesn't go anywhere with gold and silver coins. So it gives the power to finance the government back to the people, and the people will only finance that of which, not to say that you couldn't still get a lot of things done, because I mean, these people, a lot of these people in the government, they're like masters of marketing and PR, so they can still create a PR campaign that makes something that may not be the greatest thing in the world appear fantastic, and they can still get it financed. But the thing is, it's going to be harder. It's going to be a lot harder for them to get that financed in a gold and silver atmosphere.
And then they'll be asking themselves, is the juice worth the squeeze? You know, because then maybe it's not.
They're going to need to fight for it. Yeah, they're going to have to fight for it. So let's say they do really want to create something that's very weird and nefarious, and they really do want to create some MK Ultra program or whatever. It's going to be one of those things where, you know, they're going to have to sell it. They're going to have to sell it, and it's going to be harder to fund, or they're going to have to sell some larger thing. You know, that had, you know, what they would do is they would do something like where they have some larger bill called, Mental Health Protection and Awareness Act. And they would get that funded, and it would be, you know, 480,000 pages. And then one little line inside of page 383,284 in section 9482.171/87AA-1257. There would be a little blurb there, and it would say, you know, 10% of all proceeds of this act will go towards the, prisoner rehabilitation, mental awareness program. And then you go into that, and that's another 480,000 page document. On page 8,500,403, it would say something where MK Ultra, basically. That's how they would have to do it. If there was a, they do that now, but it's a lot easier now because they can get things funded in all sorts of wild ways. But gold and silver coin, they would only have a limited amount. They can't just make it up out of thin air to fund anything they want. They would have to actually create the actual value or get the actual taxation or whatever in order to actually have these physical coins that they cannot print. They cannot make more of. They'd have to actually acquire them from who? From the public, you see, or from somebody. Somebody would give it to them, you know.
They got that Nazi gold. They can probably find that somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. It's just, you know, it's a lot of these big, huge bureaucracies and things that most Americans don't really want or like. You know, it all of a sudden the PR aspect becomes very, very important. And I'm not saying that with gold and silver coins, they'll never get any of that done. No. I mean, they're brilliant. They're brilliant when it comes to PR campaigns and making things seem so freaking wonderful. They're going to have to put together a really, really phenomenal campaign to get all that funded. And to be totally honest with you, I think they would probably succeed. but my point is it's just a different system and it requires different mechanics.
I feel like they're masters of Hegelian dialect as well. They're just problem, reaction, solution. Like they do with a lot of things you see with these overthrows and installs of new governments. I mean, it's always, oh, there's an issue over here. We'll go fix it. What do you cause the issue, motherfucker? You know, it's like, it's the Richard Rose quote, and I'm big into this, and you're big into this too. You follow this philosophy in spite of you having heard the quote or not. But it's by Richard Rose, and it reads something to the effect of that I'm not interested in repairing flat tires. I'm interested in getting nails off the highway. And that's what we're talking about here, you know, because these other things within the system, those are flat tires. That's a roundabout. That's a ride that we'll see in a minute, you know, because we know where it ends. But really what you're doing here is running a massive magnet over the road, dude. So we have a clear place for our ideas to grow. And that's what's so important here. I think that's what's the most valuable here for damn sure.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. It's you know, that's why, you know, people are asking me like, how do you do this? And how do you do that? And what process and all this? And it's like the correct answer to the way to endorse an instrument is however you want to endorse an instrument. The correct answer to which process should I use is whichever one you think you can wield the sword of. I mean, I think the more complicated processes are like huge broadswords. They're very heavy. And there's like something that Cloud from Final Fantasy VII would carry around, a freaking, you know, not my style. I would rather have something more like a rapier, which is like a, you know, very, very thin, very, very agile, precise. Kind of, you know, precise, you know, pirate style kind of weapon. Right. I like simple. I like really clean. I like simple. I like, you know, more, not so much mechanical, but more like theory based. Like you can see in a lot of my lawsuits and stuff like that. I'm not trying to use like a process necessarily. I'm using all of the definitions and all of the original functionality of the actual law itself, the underbelly, like the actual skeletal structure. I would much prefer that because it's impossible to fight. Let's just put it that way. I'm not even going to say it's hard to fight. It's literally impossible to fight. Like, in the back of my head, and I could be totally wrong. I mean, litigation and all this stuff comes down to how hard are you willing to punch through the barriers to get yourself all the way to the end zone and get the ball all the way down the field. But in terms of technical, in terms of, and you can even see it in these lawsuits that these lawyers aren't going anywhere near my complaints. They don't even want to answer the complaints. They don't want to go, you know, they're being very vague, which is all going to work to my advantage because I'm going to force them to answer every single little tiny thing. Even if I have to ask it 20 times for each line, it's going to be hilarious. It's like watching a dying Wolverine flail for its last breath. But the thing is that it's one of those things where just because I feel that it's so technically sound, but it doesn't mean you're going to win. You still have to push the ball down the end zone. You can be the most technically sound football team in the world. You still have to take the ball and bring it down to the end and get it to the 100 yard line, regardless of how good your technical proficiency is. So for me, the correct endorsement is whichever one you want for whatever it is you need. The correct process is whichever one you like, whichever one you think you can wield well. The correct way of doing. I mean, when it comes to the correct way of doing something, the only caveat I'd have to that is don't be hostile, don't be rude, and don't attack. That's a surefire way to fail at whatever you're trying to do, whether it's a roadside stop with a traffic officer, or whether it's in a courtroom, or whether it's anywhere else, except bar card attorneys. That's the only caveat to that. You can be as rude as you want to them. That's fun. Everybody else, I feel like shouldn't really necessarily be treated that way right out the gate. And that includes judges. You know, even though some people are like, oh, well, judges are bar card attorneys. I got it. I'm not talking about those guys. Those guys, you need their help. And from a lot of experience that I've had, they are willing to help. I'm referring specifically to defense attorneys, bar card defense attorneys, when you are the plaintiff in a lawsuit, not anybody else, not the bailiff, not the other people who may have bar cards, but specifically the defense attorneys. Okay. And, so yeah, I think this whole, like, I'm trying to create a whole new thing, a whole new way of looking at all this, a whole new vision, which is, we're all running around talking about processes and arguing with each other over processes. It's all very petty. Pick a process, pick an endorsement, and you know, step on the playing field and push the ball down the field to the 100-yard line. That's all it is. In my opinion, it's that's what you're doing. Sitting on the sidelines and wondering which color ball you'd like to use for 10 years is not going to be very effective. Pick one. Throw it down the field and get the ball down the field. It doesn't need to happen overnight. That's the other thing too, is that, you know, I've chosen the path that could be a long path. But the thing is that as you win more and more and more in litigation, then that path that you're going to be able to get the ball down the field way faster in the future, to the point where I believe, it's my theory, you start winning a lot of cases and you start banging up a lot of people in the courts, it's going to hit a certain point where, you know, they're just going to give you a phone number. And if you need anything, you call, and they do it immediately. There is no sending orders. And then they tell you to go F off, and then you have to litigate. And then it takes 6 to 12 months. Like, I feel like this process of litigation is nothing more than a trial, not a trial, like a jury trial, but
like a trial by fire.
Trial by fire. Yeah. I could be wrong. I could be wrong. I'm not saying that to be true. That's my theory. That's my assumption for all of this, is that this is a rite of passage. Yeah.
I just find it fascinating that there are those things around here all over the place. And so we're finding that it's contracts like this, but it's scalable. And you can see in so many ways that you're giving your energy, perhaps like to a family member, or you're giving your energy over to a problem or a situation, or you've signed a contract with the government. And again, it's stacked, right? So this is what I love about this, man. It empowers us to move on and get beyond it. Like you said, move the ball down the field to the goal line. Love the analogy. So before we wrap here, let's do a couple of rapid fires and we'll do a quick afterthought. Curious about what the alternative to W-4's 1099s, if people are opting out of that system, when YouTube says, hey, we're great, you can make money with this now. Here, fill out this 1099 or W-4. What do I want to offer them instead, or anybody out there is doing this?
You mean like to make money on YouTube? Like,
yeah.
I sent them a W8 EXP, which I've never talked about too much. So a W8 EXP is a foreign entity that is not an individual, I believe. W8 BEN is for an individual. W8 EXP is for like a foreign trust. They wouldn't accept the form because the address of the PO box is located here, which is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life.
So I tried to
resend it, and I tried to send them some stuff, and there's no phone number. There's no anything to get that done. So I sent them I sent them something totally different. It was like a faith-based organization church form or something like that. And I filled that out. And then at the bottom where the signature is, I wrote like a whole bunch of information. I was like, forced to sign this under penalty, forced to sign this, even though it is false. I am a national as per blah, 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 blah. Trust is not located in the United States. Blah. And I just went on and on and on and on and on and on and on. And they accepted all of that written like that. And it was so funny too, because when it had a print button, and it's like, click here to print the document if you need copies of it, and I hit print, and it's like the document and then the signature line, and then it just has text and it comes like way off the page and it just goes down like this. And it was like over top of the date section. It was like really, and that's, they accepted it. So I don't have any tax liability for anything that I make from YouTube or any other Google, whatever. But I was pissed. I was ready to litigate. I told them too. I sent them a PDF. I uploaded a PDF and it was like a letter. And it was like, if you guys don't accept this, then I will be moving into litigation. And then the next thing I sent them, they accepted it. So I was totally ready to go to litigation for that. But it didn't go to that. You know, if anything happens in the future, then that's where I'll go. So I don't know.
So for anything like that, for any platform, if you're like, hey, I'm making money on this thing now, and you got a lot of faucets all over the place that all ask for 1099s or W-4s, do you need to go through this process with each and every one of them? Is there a simple form you can upload in place of a W-4? Like you said, W-8-B-E-N is for an individual. Well, if we're operating under our legal name, then technically that's an individual, me as the person, not me as the company, because if we're dissolving companies and going trusts, then you have one social that you're working with here, then basically you would want a W-8-B-E-N. Is that right?
Well, if you're going to be paying into the trust, and the trust is four, and it would be a W-8-E-X-P form, which I've never really talked much about, but foreign entity is W-8-E-X-P, foreign individual is W-8-B-E-N.
But do you have to have the paperwork backing that up, or can you start by just saying, hey, I'm W-8-E-X-P because I don't want to pay your fucking taxes and my business is not paying with that?
They accept whatever you give them. I mean, that's, you know,
there's not like a side quest voluntary where like system. You go over here to,
you don't even need to give them anything really.
Well, to make money on YouTube, let's say for instance, YouTube, let's say that, hey, you get in YouTube now, you're making money on this. We want to send you stuff here, fill out this form, and they give you one. But rather than that, you,
well, they let you choose. There's different bubbles. You can choose which form to fill out. There's, they got a whole bunch on there and you can fill out.
And one of them was this, W-8-E-X-P.
Yeah.
And they just didn't accept it from you because your address was the same as the business?
Because my address was located
in the United States.
Yes, that's right. And it was a P.O. box. And I tried telling them, that's just I don't live there. I just received money there. And they didn't.
Interesting. So for all things that you would go through as a content creator under anything you're making money on the internet and fill out a W-8-E-X-P, and that is how you are doing taxes from now on.
W-A-B-E-N, W-8-E-X-P, or some sort of like exemption clause for whatever, you know. You can do a W-4, and then on the signature line, you can write down all the information, you know, forced to sign, incorrect form, you know, correct form would be W-8-B-E-N or W-8-E-X-P, I am a national, non-citizen national, as per 8 U.S.C., 101 subsection 821. You could put all that information in the signature line. You can put all sorts of information in there, and if they accept it, then the signature line becomes the novation to the contract. So you actually change the contract through the signature line.
Love it.
You can write anything you want in the signature line. If they accept it, that's the contract.
What if they don't? I mean, they just tell you to fuck right off, you know, and they don't have to accept any of this. And most of the time I feel it's AI, right, doing this, or do you think that that's accurate?
I believe that if they don't accept these various things, you just litigate because
that's the whole point, right? Why would they offer the form if you can't fill out the one that applies to you, and how can they prove that it doesn't apply to you?
Well, you don't need to fill out any of the forms legally. That's the first thing.
Well, for second thing is, you, they won't let you do anything without your tax info online.
No, I know that, which is also illegal. Just to be clear, there is absolutely no anything or information or anything anywhere that proves or that forces you to fill out any form for anything. So that's the first thing.
But it's if you want to participate. So let's say if you want to get paid on YouTube, yes, you do need to fill out this form. So therefore here, you have to do it.
And you could probably litigate and win that case if you wanted to. You could probably sue them and say, I don't want to fill out any of these forms. The fact that, you know, I'm being forced to, and then what they're going to say is they're going to say, well, it's a commercial contract and it's a stipulation of a commercial contract of which that, you know, you don't have any right to have this commercial contract.
It's like their playground, right?
That would be an interesting conversation. I would go so far as to say like, that might be a difficult case to win. Now that I think about it, because if they went in that direction, that's true. You can't force anyone to contract because that would be involuntary servitude as well. I don't know what I would
go
do.
To Rumble or something. Go somewhere else.
You could also, instead of a complaint, which is for monetary damages, you could also file a petition, which is litigation, right? And you can actually subpoena the Internal Revenue Service, and you could actually get them involved in the lawsuit, and you could say, what law is there that states that I have to, you know, submit any sort of documentation if I do not wish to participate or volunteer at all into the tax system, or to be treated as a U.S. resident for the purposes of determining my income tax liability. That would be an interesting thing as well. And then you can get a court order that says that you don't have to file anything. You know, there's always a way out. It just depends on how hard you want to fight for it and how much you want to, because the thing is that when I release the pro se litigant course, which is going to be later this year when I start winning some cases, you know, the ideal situation is that we have so many people doing all this stuff and making so much money doing all this that it becomes a whole profession. And then what we do is we start to shift the behavior of these organizations from practicing business and commerce in an unlawful way, such as forcing people to fill out documentation that they do not wish to volunteer into at all. These are the things that can be changed within the system, because that's illegal. Even within the system, that's entirely illegal. You cannot force anyone to fill out anything. And you can say, I suppose you could say that it's a commercial activity and like it's a volunteer commercial activity, and we have a stipulation for that volunteer commercial activity, which is the taxes and that kind of thing. But then it's just kind of weird, because it's not really, it's like this weird, I don't know. It's not really like, it's a third party. It's a third party that has nothing to do with the actual commercial transaction. The commercial transaction is you're creating content, and then you're placing it on this already made and functioning platform, which already has a large audience base. You're getting 55% of the proceeds of the ads, and then they're the ones actually feeding the advertisers in, and they get 45% of all the ad revenue, which that's how YouTube is structured currently.
I know what it is, Brandon. It's because they're participating in the system that you have to pay for them to participate in the system to get breaks by participating in the system. So it's sort of like the people who charge extra for you to use your credit card. Yes, you can use your credit card, but we're going to add $2 to the bill because we get an extra $2 because we're playing that game. So it's almost like you're fucked by association if you want to go like that. And it's still the no shoes, no shirt, no service rule, right? It's still up to that company whether they want to do business in the way they want to. And so it's up to you not to use that company. It's not like somebody can come into your business, tell you it's unfair for you to operate in a certain way, or you should feel like you should get paid a certain way by them who offer payment to other content creators who play the game. So really it's about, I think that it is a sort of a sovereign entity, and we just sort of respect that at a level, right? Yeah, we think it sucks. And if they offer the form, we should be able to participate in it at that level because it's altruistic and it's authentic. But if it's an issue to fill out a form, you know what I mean? Then that's silly. That's where it gets silly.
Well, you can also fill out a form in a certain way, and then you can immediately, like same day, send them a different form, certified mail, and make them sign for it. And the, whether they know it or not, whether they like it or not, once they sign for it, if they don't, you know, that's it. That new form becomes the reality, even if the internet says something different. So
Fascinating. But then isn't it between you and the IRS at that point, not you and the one you sent the form to? Because then again, you'd have to revocate and elect between the IRS and you. And if you're already doing that with your social, then it going through YouTube and them requiring you to pay 1099 or fill out that and not accept any other form contracts you back into the system, right?
Well, it could possibly contract that specific person back into the system.
Right.
So keep in mind, right? So in a W-8 EXP, it's not you or the Ens Legis. It would be some other entity that you're speaking about in a W-8 EXP, right? But the thing is that it may or may not. I mean, you can also put in your revocation of election something like, you know, if at any point in the future, you know, and technically speaking, there's even one section in the marriage area of the tax code that says that, you know, there's only one election per lifetime. I don't know if that applies in all situations, but as far as I know, you can't elect anymore after you elect the first time. So it's kind of like a muddied area that very few people have ever really talked about or seen. So I don't totally know. But again, it's always better to be transparent. So you can always just create a little cover letter and you can say, you know, your online system did not allow me to make these adjustments. So I'm sending you a new form. Please process this form as soon as possible. And be sure that, you know, to inform the IRS that the previous form and anything on it was incorrect and any information on it should be destroyed or removed or whatever. You could CC the IRS and you could send them a copy of the same letter in the same form. You could put both of them on there as receipt points. And then you have one certified mail number for Google or whatever. And then you have one certified mail number for the IRS, letting the IRS know that you are sending this updated W8BEN or W8EXP or whatever it is form, and that it wasn't accepted over the internet. And you had to do some other goofy stuff. Or what worked for me is just put everything in the signature line. It worked for me. I mean, here I am.
Yeah.
I'm living proof.
No, I like it. I wouldn't have thought to just extend the line there. So
you just had a little signature thing and you just click inside of it. And I just went all the way. And you can't see any of the text. That's the problem. You can't see any of it. The little space is so small, but I just typed and 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 typed. Bam, bam,
bam, bam, bam. You could have written all work and no play makes Johnny a dull boy as many times as you want. And they probably just were like, dude, what the fuck? Just push it through. Just get it on.
Well, we had already gone back and forth. I had already threatened litigation. Like, this was probably, you know, 2 or 3 weeks of horseshit at this point. So they were probably a little exhausted by that point as well.
Interesting, dude.
It's just like anything else. Sometimes when you start getting into these areas, you have to just push until it gets done. I mean, it's a test of might. And that's one of the things that, you know, myself and Joey Kimbrough, my right-hand man over at Williams & Williams Law Firm, we're realizing is, you know, judges don't respect you if you don't have any resilience. When you start to demonstrate resilience in the courts, they really like it. They really enjoy it. It's almost as if the court system itself is sort of like a test. It's a human test. It's the true rite of passage. And if I had to go even farther, this is a little bit philosophical and I don't want to make it seem sexist or anything like that, but In the female world, when a female is getting older and she has her first period, it's sort of like the female rite of passage, right? And in some cultures, men have this. For example, in Saudi Arabia and those kind of areas, you have the Mecca or Mesa or whatever. I mean, maybe that could be a Jewish or whatever. Somewhere over in the Middle East or wherever it is, they have this thing where when they're 14 or 15, they go to Mecca and they travel there and they do this whole kind of rite of passage. And then at that point, that's the official moment where a boy becomes a man, right? And in the West, we don't have anything like that anymore. In the Indian tribes, they used to have all sorts of things. If you look up Indian rites of passage for boys becoming men, it's specifically for males. They have all sorts of things like you have to go out into the darkness of the forest and you have to survive a week or two. They have a certain thing where you have to go out and find some certain thing or kill some certain animal and bring it back or whatever it is. And then that is a ritual. And at that point, when the boy comes back, he becomes a man. And then now he's a man in the tribe. I feel like the farther I go into the legal world and litigation specifically is the male rite of passage of the West. But that's just kind of my own thing. It's not like you couldn't have a different rite of passage. There's a lot of fraternal organizations that have different rites of passage and stuff like that too. I just, for me, I feel like litigation is a rite of passage for a man because it's pure masculine energy. I mean, there's nothing feminine about litigation at all. There's nothing
which
really
be great for feminine females, physical females as well, operating in the feminine or males operating too much in the feminine, anything unbalanced, because it really gives you a chance to be actionable and to bring out that side in you, no matter what your genitalia, right?
No, I know that, but I'm just saying, like, just in general, the way that men or women are structured, I feel like litigation is more of a,
it's a battle. It's your
pound on the wall. It's literally the warfare of this society. Yeah. The warfare of this society is, you know, you don't have all the girls going off to war. You know what I mean? You have all the men going off to war. It's kind of what we do. That's kind of why I say I'm not saying like women can't have whatever, like I'm not saying any of that at all. I'm just saying like for a man who doesn't have a rite of passage in this society, in my opinion, litigation is sort of like a rite of passage for us. It is a way for us to go off to war and then come back. And when we come back, we are no longer boys. Because we don't have war. We don't have all these things in this society. We have litigation. That is what it is. And that's why I truly believe that nobody knows hardly anything about the law. So you can have a technically perfect lawsuit like what I have, but they're still doing all sorts of goofy shit. If you look up my cases on Pacer, see all the goofiness going on with case number one. And now the lawyer from case number one is on case number two. And she filed in before we had even served the documents, which is hilarious. We're actually writing a sanction to actually give her fines. It's going to be, I can't wait, man. I'm so freaking excited. But anyways, we're going to start banging up these bar cards real good. It's going to be a lot of fun, man. It's the one, you know, I try to be at peace. I try to do all these things and I'm pretty happy with everybody and I try to be fun, but like, this is war and it's voluntary war. And it's just, you know, it's you and the bar cards and you can just bang out these bar cards, you know, bang their heads up against, you know, all sorts of good things. And it's war. It's like, if you and I got in a fight in the middle of the road, the police would come and you could get all sorts of trouble and all this and that. But if you and I were to plan a UFC fight and go into the octagon, we could legally kill each other. You could legally kill me in a freaking, you could break my neck in a UFC fight. I mean, you couldn't just like grab my neck and break it, but if it kind of happened and it was like within the confines of like a legal arm bar or punch or whatever the heck they do, you ain't going to be going to jail. You ain't getting no prison time. You ain't getting nothing. So litigation is that octagon. It's the UFC octagon. And people voluntarily step inside that octagon. And then what happens in that octagon, that's it. It's all legal. It's all good. So you can't, you know, if you break, you know, if you have some kind of piece of glass that you have hidden under your waistband and you pull it out and stab the other guy in the chest, which there are that kind of thing that could happen in a court case where illegal things and crazy things and that wouldn't be acceptable. But as long as you're playing within the confines of the rules to some degree, I mean, it's kind of an anything goes kind of a battle, you know.
Interesting analogy, dude. Well, we're grateful you're on the front lines, man. Sounds like an amazing rite of passage, and you're really giving us a lot of fucking confidence, dude. That's why we're grateful to continue this series with you, man. This is amazing. So one more question. Let's wrap it up on this one. Stick around for an afterthought if you don't mind. Again, guys, a video version located down in the show description, as well as the Sovereign Rangers series, which you can find down in the show description. All of it completely free, even though it reads Patreon. Check it out for damn sure. We've got it all organized over there. So wanted to ask you about tax returns. We're going to wrap up this tax talk here for this time, and then we'll get another one set here real soon. But returns, tell people what that is. Oh, man, why would I miss out on that extra $5,000 a year? Man, I get that. Man, I get a new mower, man, Bubba. So what's up with the tax return? Set people straight on that, if you don't mind.
Well, at the end of the year, they have a certain amount of money that you've given them if you're an employee. But if you're not, then what you're going to be doing is at the end of the year, you're going to be filing to let them know how much you owe them or how much tax liability you have. And then if you're already an employee somewhere and you've already been paying into this thing all year long, then at the end of the year, it's still the same thing. You're still reporting to them your tax liability, but you're saying you already have X amount of money from me. And I owe you, as per my voluntary tax liability, this amount. And the difference is this amount of which I will pay you or of which you refund to me. That is essentially how all of this works in a nutshell, right? When you do the revocation of election to be treated as a U.S. resident for the purposes of determining your income tax liability, now at the end of the year, if they have $9,000 of yours, you would send them, you know, tax liability for this year is zero. You have $9,000 of mine. Please return the $9,000 that you have of mine. So even if you are at a job, or even if you do have an employer, or even if you are at a payroll company, at the end of the year, if you wanted to, you could just have them take the money out. I don't recommend that. It's not good. But if you wanted to do it that way, and then at the end of the year, you could just file zero, WABEN, W8EXP, or whatever other form you're going to be using. And then you would just say, you know, you guys have $12,000. It's all mine. Please return that. And normally with the IRS, they, you know, I don't see how or why that would be a problem. Maybe it would be. Maybe I don't even think they'd ask questions. I don't think the IRS really asks any questions. I think as long as you somewhat coherently fill out kind of the correct form, they'll just process it. You would need to be like way off. You would need to be like, just, I don't even know, you know,
super scammer, just not doing a good job at it.
It would have to be something bad. Yeah. It would have to be really something weird or stupid or like wildly out of the ordinary. I don't know. It would just be really goofy, you know?
Yeah. All right, my friend, that wraps this Sovereign series. We're going to continue this thing, so stick around if you don't mind, my brother. All the ways, of course, to find this great man, his work, and the rest of the Sovereign Ranger series will be located diggity down in the show description. Please check that out if you are interested. My friend, we're talking taxes, we're talking heavy stuff, but you're a man of empowerment and wisdom, and I love your philosophies on these things. So as we wrap, dude, take these last words and just empower the shit out of some people with them.
Yeah, it's all a voluntary system. If you get mad, it's kind of silly because there's nothing to get mad about. It's a voluntary system. One of the easiest things you can always do is, ask people, are you attempting to entice me into a involuntary servitude situation? Are you attempting to prevent me from understanding and clarifying, you know, the contract of which you are attempting to, you know, whatever, or are you attempting to coerce me into some sort of contractual obligation? Are you attempting to make me feel bad? Are you getting frustrated by my desire to understand? And are you trying to overpower me and crush me because I'm asking these various questions? Do I have a right to understand the contract or understand what it is that I'm, you know? And the truth is, and you don't have to ask this directly because it could be very confrontational, they're angry because they don't know. That's why they're angry. So when you say something and they freak out, it's because they don't know. And they know they probably should know. And they know that the fact that they don't know is probably pretty bad. And they don't really want you knowing that they don't know most of the time. And that's why people get so upset sometimes, like payroll companies and all that, when you do this kind of stuff, right? So the thing is that you do have a right to know. You do have a right to be shown definitions. You do have a right to understand every single box on every single form. You do have a right to ask any questions you want, and you have the right to not sign anything that you don't want to sign. And you have a right to get any sort of damages collected or any sort of difficulties or any sort of area where someone is not following the law and it's harming you or harming your life or reducing your standard of living. You have a right to litigate. You have a right to correct that and to get damages for any harm or any damage that may have come to you or your bank account or your time or your mental health or your emotional health or your reputation.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.